Thank you, Domiti. It's 10:12 on WGN. This is John Williams. There's Griffin Filipich, our producer. Nice to have Joe doing the sports for us, too. And Bob Ferguson's been working around, clearing up a few technical bugs for us on the engineering side. And it feels good and hopefully sounds good to you here on WGN Radio. We do the bright side on Fridays, and we didn't get a chance to do as much of it as I normally wanted to, in part because we're covering a couple of things like the stock market's daily crash. But I wanted to read a couple of them that have since come in and that we didn't get a chance to read. I said I would yesterday about now. So if you want to still, you can text in something good in your world, something that's making you smile. Griff, you'll need to print or read those. But I'm just reminded of my desire to do this because I've been looking at the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Crimes today, and both of them have really nice pictures. The Sun-Times one is particularly good. Of Stan Mikita's grandkids skating out onto the ice last night. Do other teams do this, and do we always do this, Joe? It was the sweetest thing. So they had Billy, Charlie, and Tommy out there wearing their grandfather's uniform with the A on the sweater, on the jersey, and the complete Blackhawks garb out there. And the expression on their faces as they come onto the ice, particularly in the Sun-Times, they just look so excited and happy and so full of the moment. It's the sweetest dang thing.
It was a very cool move by the Blackhawks because obviously Stan Mikita's days are numbered. He's dealing with dementia right now. And somebody reported that when his family told him that the Blackhawks were doing that, he kind of perked up a little bit.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it, their faces. Boy, do they look like him. I mean, that's two generations, and I mean, you can really see some resemblance there.
I don't know if you can sometimes tell something about somebody's personality based on a glance. I remember when I would occasionally bump into Matt Bubala's triplets as they were getting older and as their personalities were developing. I mean, Matt was producing for me when those little babies were born, and then we've seen them come all the way through their middle years, right? So every now and then we'd bump into them, and you could tell Tommy had a certain personality and so on and so forth, and some different than the others. All of that to say this, I'm looking at the faces of these kids, and I think I know something about them. This one's a buster. This one's trouble. This one's energy. You know what I mean? All good attributes I'm getting from these kids, but they have different expressions on their faces, all of them animated, all of them excited to be there. And if you were at the United Center last night, that must have been so much fun. That must have been good for you. How much fun was that? If you were there, I'd kind of be curious what that was like. My number's 312-981-7200. So Billy and Charlie and Tommy and do all the Mikitas, our best to you. And oh, the memories that Grandpa's provided, and how nice that these kids had a moment for us as well on the ice. We're going to talk a little bit more about sports at 10:35. Joe, because we'll just do a sort of recap of where the Masters is so far and some of the amazing storylines this year, including Sergio Garcia's tin cup moment, where he hit five consecutive shots into the water. That, he had the worst over par performance by anyone in the history of the Masters. That is, he shot about as well as you or I will ever shoot if we played that golf course.
I mean, it was just straight from the movie. I got a text update, and all of a sudden, I put it on, and just one after another after another.
Five times.
Got to give some nod to his confidence, though. I don't think I'd ever be able to do that.
Just, what do you mean by that?
Just ask for another ball, rather than take the penalty, right?
You can do that, right? Then you just take the ball out of the water, ostensibly. You place it nearest the water hazard, and then you're able to play from there. That would have been the smart play, right?
I would think after maybe the third or fourth time, yes.
But then you take a penalty stroke for that, but you're putting one in and taking one out anyway, so you might as well. Yeah.
Kudos to him.
For somebody who missed the cut, I mean, there's the defending champion who is not playing on Saturday. That happens. In fact, I have the list of golfers who won it and then also missed the cut. Let me see if I've got it in front of me. You could probably name some off the top of your head. Jack Nicklaus did it. That is, won the Masters, and then in an ensuing year, missed the cut. Seve Ballesteros did it twice. Ben Crenshaw missed the cut Nick Faldo once missed the cut. Mike Weir missed the cut. Last year, Danny Willett missed the cut. Sergio Garcia this year misses the cut. So it's not without precedent, but that has never been done before. What a way to blow up. Almost a heroic way to blow up.
Go out with a bang.
So on the bright side, some of the things that you called in yesterday or texted in, but we couldn't get you. John, this is for the bright side. I've been driving around on bald tires because I can't afford new ones, and my sister-in-law just bought me brand new tires today. I feel like I have a new car. Who buys their brother-in-law new tires? She did. Good for you, 847. Another one from 847. John, tax season is almost over, and my very tired husband will be coming home for dinner again. From 815, my daughter finally decided where she's going to college. She's going to be an NIU Husky. My granddaughter is able to adopt the precious baby girl she has been fostering, and we are thrilled. From 224, here's my bright side. I did not have to have the needle biopsy today at the doctor's office. Just a round of antibiotics. Yay, those needle biopsies hurt. And from 309, this is Central Illinois. This week, my winter coat is back on, and my sunglasses are off, but the grass in my yard is greener than it was last week. That's looking ahead. John, here's my bright side. Another from 309, just returning from Kansas City, where my daughter learned she's expecting her third boy, and they are moving back to Illinois this summer. From 815, my parents have been happily married for 71 years on Friday, still living in the same house for the past 64 years. Healthy, with it, and love life. Best parents ever. Boy, you know your gift to your kids and grandkids is your health. If you can do that, everybody's happy. My bright side, John, is we're celebrating 6 months of working in the Institutional Advancement Office at Joliet Junior College. That's one of John Williams' alma maters. It truly is. Go Wolves. Matt from Marengo said, my bright side is seeing Clay Jenkinson as Teddy Roosevelt in Schaumburg tomorrow night. That would be tonight. I didn't know TR is in town soloing without me. How dare he? I guess if you're Teddy Roosevelt, you can do whatever you want. Charge up San Juan Hill, do it without John Williams. Fine. Fine.
Yeah, he did a whole presidency without you, too. That must burn you up. He had a whole life without you.
You know, I got to tell you, that guy that does Teddy Roosevelt and Thomas Jefferson, he and I have become great friends over the years. And if you're lucky enough to go to Schaumburg and see him this evening, I'll recommend it, not even knowing until this morning that he's in town. I presume maybe some tickets are still for sale, although I'll show with him always sells out. But I know him better as Teddy Roosevelt and Thomas Jefferson. I mean, literally, there would be times backstage or in casual conversation, I would say something like, well, you guys, oh, no, wait. you weren't one of the founding fathers. You're a guy who lives in the United States in 2018. John, I was diagnosed with cancer this week. Although highly curable, it will be hard and uncomfortable for me. My bright side is I have a beautiful wife and a little girl, and they will help me beat this. Love you guys, says Sean. And finally, from 773, John, my bright side, just found out I'm getting a refund on my income tax. Hey, Mr. Winkler, still waiting to hear from you, sir. Kind of curious if I'm going to get anything back, or I'm going to have to write a monstrous check. You'll know the day I find out by the tone of my voice. It's 1020 on WGN. Hey, Gloria, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. What can I do for you?
Hi, I want to say something to Sean, who was just diagnosed with cancer.
He's got
two little kids, he said. My husband was diagnosed when he was 29, lost his leg to the disease. We had these two little kids, 3 and 6. He is going to be 72. And so that is big-time hope for this man, and hope, prayers, support. It's what it's all about.
You know, whenever we do that Bright Side segment, we hear little trivial things like, hey, my favorite TV show's coming on, and then people who beat cancer. And I always find myself not knowing exactly what to say, but thinking and saying this. We live in amazing times, don't we? That
we do. And my husband also got cancer a second time in 85. They could not treat him here in Chicago. They sent us to MD Anderson and saved his life. Yeah. MD Anderson is a cancer facility in Houston, Texas, where they develop everything experimentally. Huh. So this guy, I give him so much hope and so much love from lots and lots of people, because that's what got us through. I don't even know sometimes how we did it. But, you know, it's how you're raised, one foot in front of the other, and, you know, you just... That's how you go through life.
That's what you got to do. And
so, and we're in the same house all the year. So life is good, and I hope the same for this man and his family.
Nice of you to call. Thank you, Gloria.
All righty, bye-bye.
Have a good day. And that's what it is. We call it a group hug on the radio on Fridays. The Bright Side is a segment we do at, let's see, we do it at 2:40 about on Fridays. Real quick. Hey, Brian, you're on WGN. What can I do for you?
Hey, how's it going, John?
What's up, man?
So my bright side is last year I survived a serious fire. I almost died, but I'm okay now. Quick shout out to Loyola Hospital and Shirley Ryan Ability Lab. And also this week I'm moving to Colorado, so I'm very happy.
We're going to miss you, Brian. Will you come back and visit us?
Heck yeah, I will.
That Shirley Ryan Ability Lab I've been through there is space age. It is the most impressive medical facility of any type I have ever seen.
It's incredible. I was actually the first patient to not be transferred from the old building. So it was brand new. It was amazing.
Yeah, I was just there last year. And it's just amazing, the technology and the individual attention. So you're doing okay, huh?
I'm doing great. I'm doing just great.
Brian, you've just buoyed our spirits. It's nice to hear you. Have a great time in Colorado.
You too, man. I love you.
Hey, Brian.
Yes?
You're not going there because recreational marijuana is legal in Colorado, are you?
You know what? It's a bit of a plus, but that's not the only reason.
You take care, Brian.
You too, Matthew.
Then we play this little song on Friday.
For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always fight.
It's 1027 on WGN. All right, Domitee's got the news for you right around the corner. A real smart guy about golf has a few things to say about the Masters. I think you'll enjoy this even if you're not a golf fan. After the news, that's all coming up on WGN.
This is the last ball you got in the bag, Roy. You get this one, we're disqualified.
I can make it across.
Well, then do it.
Oh, God. He's right. You're right, Roy. Just knock it on. Let her rip.
Oh, Molly, you're losing.
No, I have lost it. So is he.
It's a preview of the yet-to-be-made Sergio Garcia story, also known as Tin Cup. I'm reading from YahooSports.com from Augusta, Georgia. Sergio Garcia had gone from defending Masters champion to someone about to post a score that would cause shame on the lowliest of a Sunday duffer. That's not true. But still, it says here, he was knocking shot after shot onto the green at the 15th hole. See, that's already distinguishing him from most Sunday duffers. Most of us can't hit it 200 yards onto the green five times in a row close to the cup. In his case, it kept spinning into the water, but even that, you know, that's the difference between them and us. When they do badly, that's still us doing pretty well. To continue, shot after shot onto the green of the 15th hole here in the Masters, only to see them spin back, sometimes swiftly, sometimes slowly, and roll back toward and then into the pond. One went in, then another, then another, then another, then another still. Five shots in a row. Five Callaway Chrome Soft X's finding a watery grave. Five in the drink by a major champion at a major championship. Was number 15. He had to take a 13 on hole number 15. It got him to 9 over 81 and pretty much doomed his chances. I don't know what to tell you, he said. It's one of those things. I felt like I hit a lot of good shots, and unfortunately, the ball just didn't want to stop. The crowd was gasping in shock and then horror and then regaling each other with stories, having done the same thing that one time at some municipal golf course back home. Garcia was going through golfing hell. He's tin cupping it, one fan said, referencing the immortal Roy Tin Cup McAvoy of the 1995 movie, played by Kevin Costner, who, with a chance to win the U.S. Open, kept finding the water and, rather than smartly laying up, kept shooting the same shot he posted in the movie, an unapologetic 12 to lose the tournament. Sergio put up a 13. Even Hollywood didn't make it that bad, Joe.
I was on the same article as you were, and like each shot looks so decent, so good, and then just that extra momentum. I mean, it's everything we love about golf, the great shots where people curve out of the woods and somehow find the green. It was the exact opposite with that.
That's why we love sports. Listen, if all of the great golfers always made the tough shots and they made them and it went great for them, well, then it wouldn't be so interesting. It's knowing that, in fact, they can put it in the water and that they're playing so on the knife's edge that at any moment it can go catastrophically bad for them. Why do you watch the Indy 500? It's great to see the skill and the speed, but you also know that those cars can crash, and that's part of the fascination with it all. And I guess it's a little bit that way with the Masters here. Wow, that guy is that close to the water. And it never goes in. Oh, wait, it did. Oh, wait, it did. Oh, wait, it did. He's crashing in the far turn.
Just a total mental implosion. But, I mean, every shot was good. And then that extra backspin, the third one, it looked like it was going to stick. And then it just kept gradually growing and growing and then rolling off.
Well, from the reporting I'm reading that I guess you saw, too, there was concern whether Garcia would run out of golf balls. And what exactly that might mean? Does that mean he's disqualified? Even the players weren't sure. Actually, USGA rules state a player can borrow golf balls if needed, but that's embarrassing. Hey, I'll tell you what. I'm no golfer, right? I have sometimes gone out there with 15, 20 golf balls. I have that whole container in the bag full of golf balls, and I lose them all. I lose them in the weeds, I lose them in the woods, I lose them in the fairway, I lose them in the water. If there's water, I just put them right in there, right in there, right in there, right in there.
Could you imagine somebody's pockets just bulging with about 17 golf balls at each side?
Well, there was concern that he might have to borrow some. He had enough. So we thought, well, let's ask Matt McEntee. I heard him on with Steve Bertrand yesterday. He is the CEO of a company called Green Golf Partners. And he knows golf better than most folks do, so we asked him to jump back on with us today. Hi, Matt. You're on WGN again. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
What do you think of that conversation? What would you add to it so far?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed every bit of that conversation. You know, I think one of the – I mean, I've played quite a bit of competitive golf over the years, and it's a lot harder than most people think watching it on TV, but to see Sergio hit 5 golf balls, you know, in the water in a row. And then, you know, the reality that most guys wouldn't know what to do if they ran out of golf balls. You know, I mean, it would be incredibly embarrassing to have to go to to your fellow competitor and say, hey, listen, I need a golf ball.
What do you got in your bag there, by the way? So the yeah. thing, too, is that these pro golfers put such spin on the ball, underspin, that, you know, they sort of overshoot it and it rolls back, rolls back, rolls back. And I guess he could not figure out with that club from that distance how to not put backspin it, where most of us would love to be able to do it. He couldn't not.
Well, that's true. And you know, you have to look at it, the fact that it's Augusta. So you're talking about some of the fastest greens on the planet. They're super severe slopes. They shave the front of that green down. And most of the time, the guys that do hit it in the water, you don't really get a chance to see them because they follow the leaders. And the leaders are guys that are typically, you know, playing extremely well. But there's a number of guys that came to that hole all day. Nobody obviously hit 5 in a row, but they hit it in there with a sand wedge and spin it back. And the shots that he hit were so close to perfection. I think that's what, you know, most people don't really recognize, how they were not horrifically struck shots.
Yeah, was, right.
And you're talking about the 2017 Masters champion and one of the best wedge players in the world,
yeah.
And he can't control the spin.
You know what I want somebody to do is go into that pond, and they've probably done this already, get those balls and put them on display in the somewhere.
One after another.
Yeah. One after another. Here's number one. Here's number two. And just remember that even the great ones some days have bad days. You are talking to my colleague Steve Bertrand, though, not so much about Sergio, who yesterday afternoon you thought still might have a chance to make the cut. The course was playing tough, but in fact, he did not. Tiger did, and he hasn't been playing well. But you were talking about sort of what Tiger means to the game now that he's playing competitively again and has been playing well. What's the Tiger sort of print on this year's Masters, Matt?
Well, I mean, it's huge, huge. The excitement's probably the highest it's been in years. A couple of the commentators bristled at that, like Curtis Strange. But the reality is, I think this has been one of the most anticipated Masters. The ticket prices are the highest they've been, and the coverage has been, you know, more extreme and broader than ever before. It's this morning, I'll give you a great example. In the coverage this morning on ESPN, they never mentioned the leaders one time other than to say that they were leading the golf course or leading the golf tournament, and they had two special segments on Tiger. And he is 13 strokes. He started the day 13 strokes out of the lead.
Huh.
So, you know, it just says how, you know, how incredibly popular he is and how valuable he is. When he is the brand that people want, despite his past shortcomings, he's still the most exciting player in the world. And when he shows up and he's in contention, and obviously he finished in the top five in the previous two tournaments he played coming in to Augusta, everybody was, you know, salivating at seeing him on the leaderboard. I think they still are.
Sorry, Matt, I don't mean to cut you off, but does that bother you at all that he's essentially the LeBron James, the Boston Red Sox, the New York Yankees of golf? I mean, like you said, he's four over par, he's tied for 40th, but, I mean, he's the one that's stealing the show right now.
Yeah, I mean, it used to bother me more than it does now because I you know, I was feeling like there was some kind of fairness thing. You know, there's all these great players. But the reality is, you know, with anything that shines a spotlight on the sport like he does or LeBron does or Michael Jordan did back in the day, I think it benefits it. If I was Mark Leishman,
right,
or Patrick Reed, especially Patrick Reed, who's kind of he's a very confident guy. But on the other hand, you could say the flip side of that is it's nice to be under the radar and not having to do a million interviews, and maybe that reduces your stress a little bit.
I was thinking that. I think the only person that really has a legitimate claim to being upset about this is Patrick Reed's mom, because it's probably good for Patrick Reed. And what are you going to do? Tell people to not like a particular athlete? If, rightly or wrongly, we like Tiger Woods or Michael Jordan or LeBron James, but Tiger Woods has certainly been a flawed character both on the course and in his personal life. I think that just makes him that much more fascinating. And what are you going to do? Fix it? You can't tell the world to not love Tiger Woods or be fascinated by Tiger Woods. So it is what it is.
Well, look at it this way, too. Patrick Reed, his favorite player as a kid, the guy that he credits for getting him into golf, and Roy McIlroy says the same thing, as Tiger Woods. On Sundays, at every golf tournament he plays in, Patrick Reed dresses in Tiger Woods' black pants and a red shirt. And it just so happened a couple of weeks ago they were both playing on Sunday, both wearing identical outfits. And that's Woods. That's what he does. And Patrick's emulating Woods. So maybe Patrick's happy to be in that conversation.
Well, it's good. It's nice to be compared to or associated anyway, I guess, with Tiger, certainly on the golf course. He doesn't have any hope now, right? He didn't have a good Saturday either. He's not going to place in the top 10, is he?
I don't think there's any chance. He's two over. The golf course is playing tough in the rain. He's 15 back. The greatest comeback after 54 holes was Jackie Burke from 8. And I don't think we'll see anybody do any better than that. So if you're not within 8 strokes of the lead, I think it's you've got 7 of the top 10 in the world, 4 prior Masters champions, and 7 major winners within 8 strokes. So no, there's too much home. He'd need too much help. It's not going to happen.
I am looking at the leaderboard. Just give me one other story before I let you go here, Matt. Reed and Stenson and McIlroy, Johnson, et cetera. Who would somebody be fun to watch? If we're clicking on the TV, give me an anecdote or a storyline or a golfer that you think would be good for me to spend a little time and attention on.
Well, there's two. One, you've got Tony Finau, who's still within striking distance after dislocating his ankle.
Oh, he's the guy that was celebrating and twisted his ankle. laughing. Yep. What a shame.
No, but how many times have we seen that, especially in football, if you're a Bears fan?
Yeah.
But so Tony Finau, and then I think one of the most interesting things, some people may not really think it is, but you've got the number one player in the world, Dustin Johnson, Wayne Gretzky's son-in-law lurking. Nobody's talking about this guy. He's number one in the world. Last year at this time, or last year before the Masters, he was everybody's favorite. And you guys, I don't know if you remember this, he fell down the stairs at his rental house.
Yeah.
In Augusta.
Yeah.
And he's never been the same. All of a sudden, he's still ranked number one in the world. He's playing at Augusta this week, and he's in striking distance, and he's probably one of the most fun players to watch. You know, for me, I like the old guys because I'm an old guy. So Fred Couples made the cut. BJ Singh made the cut. They're 50. Fred can't even walk. He needs to go to the back institute or whatever. I mean, the poor guy, he can't walk. But I think if you're going to have a fun storyline and you're not the dislocated ankle guy isn't your shtick, follow Dustin Johnson because, you know, here you got if any other number one in the world, if it was Spieth or Roy McIlroy, that's all we'd hear. And here you go, this guy, nobody's talking about him. So
he's tied for sixth, and Finau's tied for eighth. They both tee off at 2 or just a little after. I'm not sure if that's Eastern or Central time. I'm looking at 2 and 2:10 tee times. Those are probably Eastern. Yeah,
yep.
So 1 o'clock today for them and 1:10. Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Matt. Give me 30 seconds on your business. What do you do?
We're a golf management company. We have 22 golf courses in 5 states, own, manage, and lease, and consult, do a lot of work. We have a couple in Chicago, Kemper Lakes, where we'll be hosting the women's PGA, KPMG PGA Championship this summer in June, and some ones in Florida, which would be a lot nicer to be at today. This has not been golf weather lately, and as I listen to your forecast, 39 is the high today. But, yeah, we're in the golf business. Love it. I'm one of those guys that'll tell you it never feels like I'm going to work because I get to do what I love, and I'm lucky to have great partners, and we have some of the best people on the planet working for us.
Matt McEntee is the...
We'll be bored this weekend.
Yeah. He's the CEO, Matt is, of GreenGolfPartners.com, GreenGolfPartners.com. Thanks for your time. We'll visit again another day.
All right. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the Masters.
Yeah, no kidding. Matt McEntee. It's 10:52. The Men Sing Rascals, our weekly podcast broadcast, comes your way. It's a roundtable of some really smart folks. I get to host them, and they'll be kicking around some local stories and some national stories, too. And we'll ask you about that today. That's a little after 11. Also, in the next hour, we will review. Have you guys seen yet? Joe, have you? I don't know if you go to many movies, but producer Griffin and I went to see Ready Player One, the new Steven Spielberg movie. Griff, I'm thinking we should do people a favor and just tell them not to go.
It's technically, I think it's actually, my official opinion is that it's fine. I would go like 3 out of 5 stars, but the more I think about it, the less I like it.
Yeah, I was doing the same thing, and then you said to me, well, then stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
But I really can't, because I think it's a really intriguing idea. The concepts behind the movie could be so fun. I think it's a big swing.
It has smart ideas, and it takes them exactly the wrong way. You think anybody who had this vision must know where to go with it. And actually, I think they made all the wrong choices.
And that's the thing. I'm surprised that Spielberg, having watched the movie, or the stars as the movie was evolving, literally as they were shooting it. And of course, so much of it is done in computers and not maybe on sets. But somebody should just go, you know, this isn't a good movie. We're not making a good movie. We know that, right? Right? You tell him. Hey, that's Steven Spielberg over there. You tell him. We'll talk more about that, plus the Mincing Rascals. Thank you, Domati. I'm John Williams. Our review of the movie, maybe you saw it too and want to praise it or damn it, but we'll talk a little bit about Ready Player One and a couple of other films in the next half hour. Ready Player One, the new sci-fi Steven Spielberg film. But first, let's do our Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. We record a podcast usually on Thursdays, this week on Friday, yesterday, here in the Tribune Tower. This week, we recorded it with our own Steve Bertrand, Patty Vasquez, who hosts one of the shows pretty late at night here on WGN, and Scott Stantis, who is the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Now, Tronc, which is the company that owns the Chicago Tribune and its building, is selling the Tribune Tower. On the side of this building, in big letters, is a sign that reads, Chicago Tribune. The new owners want the building with the sign on it. The Tribune wants to take the sign with them when they exit the building. I asked the gang who should get to keep the sign. We started with Scott Stantis, who works for the Chicago Tribune.
Well, I mean, technically it's attached to the building. It seems to me you bought the building, you bought the sign.
Usually in real estate, usually.
Don't you think?
And, well, there's a clause in the contract that says that we get the sign for a dollar, but the Tribune says that's not applicable in this case, so we'll let a judge or jury figure that out. But usually in real estate, stuff that's attached to the house, this is how most of us relate to it.
Yeah.
Stays with the house.
Yeah, but if it says Bertrand on the side of the house, is this more about them wanting to keep the letters or them wanting to protect their identity and say, this isn't us anymore?
That's how they're fighting it mostly. They're going to say, no, that's proprietary. That's a copyrighted thing. And if so, suppose they put a, say they put a sex shop up there. Sex novelties went in there. I don't know.
Oh, you mean, and the Tribune sign was still on there.
And the sign is still there. I could just see how the Tribune does not like any association with its name that they don't control.
That's a good point.
You know, my first reaction was this, though. I would hate to see the Chicago Tribune logo ripped off the side of this building.
Well, then they should have bought more papers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, this is what happens. The Tribune doesn't live here anymore. And if it's the Tribune sign and their trademark, I mean, I have no lawyer.
As a passerby,
I don't know what's going to happen,
but it's still a beautiful building. But it's iconic with Chicago Tribune, blam, emblazoned on the side. What would your preference be, just as a third party? You'd like the sign on the side of the building.
Well,
Thank you, Patty, your thoughts.
Yes, I'd love to have the sign on the side of the building. That would be lovely.
Scott Stantis, go.
My question is, what happens when, you know, what are they going to do with it? Let's assume for a moment that Tribune wins. Are we going to plaster it on the front of the Prudential building we're moving to?
They could auction it off. They could put it in the hallway and run it down a long corridor in the Tribune.
I get the yes.
They could make it a kid's playground, right? Kids climbing all over the letters in some park.
Well, all of those are not crazy ideas.
I really do think, though, your point is the best one, or maybe it was mine, that you know, that it's about protecting their identity as well. They're now labeling a building. You know, companies don't buy corporate naming rights to buildings that they don't agree with or don't have some say over. This, in a way, is a corporate naming right ordeal.
But this will always be Tribune Tower. It will forever. I mean,
not Sears Tower to a lot of people now.
But it doesn't say Sears in big letters. And by the way, it is to a lot of us, Sears Tower.
The older people. I mean, not to my kids.
Another local story. It's suburban Maine West. The school's nickname and mascot are the Warriors. Picture and video have gone viral this week of the ceremony at a recent assembly. The honor of being the mascot is handed from one student to another.
Oh, what a terrible thing to do to a kid.
It's funny, too, because the students go bananas. And the kid does a warrior dance. He comes out, and he's got his arms crossed in front of him. He's got the headdress and the leather garb. And the dance is really well executed and not simple. I mean, I'm impressed with what they showed when they did the dance. But obviously, some people have now seen the video, so the school is re-examining the use of the mascot.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well,
that?
As a Lane Tech grad, we're the Lane Tech Indians, and actually, we talked about this even back when I was in school in the '90s about is this okay to do? And we've been talking about it now for 30 years.
Yeah, I know.
And nothing's changed. We don't take. There were people I was friends with at University of Illinois, so I've gone to two schools where the mascot, I guess you would say,
why you went?
Yes, I'm just going to transfer over this Native American symbol. To this Native American symbol. You know, I guess there's always going to be a way to justify the reason that you are doing something. And then there comes a point where you have people who are being threatened and attacked because they disagree with it. I had a friend who had her windows broken because she was a protester against Chief Iwek. So, I mean, I've always thought, at least even when I was a kid, I thought, well, if this bothers somebody and we've already done so much to this community, is it really that much of a trial on us? Is it much of a burden to go, okay, I see your point of view.
Did Lane Tech change?
No. Lane Tech is still the Lane Tech Indians.
Really?
And we have the newspapers called The Warrior. And
I went to Marquette when they were the Marquette Warriors. And now they're struggling in basketball.
I'm a former Manuka Indian. What's your point? But
They switched to the Golden Eagles.
Yeah,
What
do you think should happen at this high school?
You know, I think that's a very low standard, Patty. If someone is offended, we should change.
Offended is different than seeing their traditions hijacked.
Okay.
Being that's a different thing altogether.
But that goes back, and I'm trying to remember, there was an NBC reporter years ago I had this conversation with when a lot of this was coming up, and he sort of had that standard. You know, if there are people who have genuine offense or can show harm, then we should acquiesce to mm-hmm. them. I'm assuming that the people who are complaining have never been to Main West or couldn't name the town that it's in, you know? So I'm a little resistant to let people who, just because they can afford an internet to dictate policy.
Right. From my point of view, it was people from within the community in University of Illinois and at Lane Tech.
Right.
Yes.
Well, but, I don't know what's going on.
But aren't you missing the whole context here? It's not that somebody's offended. It's offended because white people executed genocide on Indian tribes all across America, number one. And number two, now we turn it into a, the word they used was entertainment, mm-hmm. an entertaining mascot for the school.
The reason it's a mascot is because it's an entire population that was decimated, and we continue to use it in ways that
I think it's chosen for. I think it's actually more benevolent than that in a weird way that you want a mascot to be something that's badass, that projects, you know, we're triumphant and we're going to win.
Well, nobody picks a loser as their mascot, right? You celebrate the chief, and the chief celebrates the school.
Well,
and
it's
all
a romanticized story. I mean, look, there are a lot of teams that are named after the Cowboys, and not because they were slaughtered or otherwise abused. It's sort of an American story. I don't really care, you know.
Right. I mean, that's where I am, to be honest with you.
Exactly.
After all this,
there are people like who are still call Marquette the Marquette Warriors, and I just think, you know, you've kind of missed it. But I am a little apprehensive about letting an offended class dictate everything.
Well, I'm hesitant to allow people who get belligerent and off, sometimes violent and nasty, say, well, this is our tradition, you're not going to touch it. You know
right.
what I'm saying? And
no,
that to me gets really ugly. And I watch it unfold on social media when it comes to Lane Tech. Obviously, we went through it at the University of Illinois.
I'm amazed that anybody was able to get away with this anymore. I thought all of these fights had been fought and lost.
Well, people dig in, though. People want to protect it and keep these images.
This argument has been had so many times. My perception is that the tide is coming in. You cannot fight this
anymore.
It's
going to change.
However righteous your cause is or your love of this benevolent image, that's not the way we're interpreting it these days. Confederate statues are coming down, and doggone it, your mascot. If I was the superintendent of that school who said we're going to look into it, I'd look into it tomorrow, and the next day I would fix it. I would say, we're not going to do the mascot kid anymore. We're not going to do that. It's gone. And the students will be outraged.
I think maybe their parents will be outraged. I don't think the
alums
really
the alumni. Yeah.
I got to tell you, the students really were psyched about this. I thought it was nice to see them. Maybe some of the kids are mocking it and rolling their eyes, but it seemed to be genuine enthusiasm for the school and the mascot and that, and those two kids that were on this floor.
You know, I went to Bishop McNamara High School, and their mascot is the Fighting Irish, and well, it was under fire until, well, thank God Conor McGregor came out for us this weekend. Backed up the nickname.
My high school, we were the Regents. We couldn't even be the Kings. We were the damn
the Regents.
We were the Regents of West Senior High School of Madison, Wisconsin.
My grade school was the Trojans, which just led to a lot of condoms.
Boy, there's, I know, really. That's terrible. I would change that before I would change
sad.
That. I would start there.
I don't get that, Patty.
We're going to Trump land now. Will Scott Pruitt be in the employ of the federal government by July 4th?
No.
The president said that he's doing a great job, and he tweeted that, can you believe this fake media that seems to think it knows what's going to happen? So out by the 4th of July.
Well, usually it's the week before when he starts really reemphasizing how much somebody is valuable
right.
and they're worth, and then like a week later they're gone.
I mean, there was a story, was it this week, that his security guy was reassigned because he refused to turn the lights on in his car?
Well, yeah, he wanted them to get through traffic. He said, put the lights and siren on. He goes, it's not an emergency. We can't do that. 2 weeks later, that security detail guy is reassigned.
I know. This is head of the EPA. I mean, and apparently had to get to a fancy French restaurant.
I don't know the story.
True story.
I keep hearing references to it about the Secret Service had to break down his room because they couldn't get to him because he was asleep or wasn't responding. You guys are looking at me.
I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Pick the crazy Scott Pruitt story. He's either a curiosity or an embarrassment, the way he's been spending money. The funny thing is, Scott Pruitt is actually getting more done than any of the cabinet members. If getting it done means doing what the president wants.
Regulations?
Yeah, really. He's your big rolling back regulations daddy. Some people believe that the reason the president is so sticking up for him is ultimately he wants him to be attorney general.
Do you remember that Seinfeld where the George character tried to break up with his girlfriend and she just said no?
We have to break up.
No.
What's that?
We're not breaking up.
This is what Jeff Sessions is. Trump over and over says we're not a couple anymore. We're done. And Jeff just says,
nah,
no.
We're still a couple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go. Well, Sessions has a great threshold for pain, doesn't he?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, the stuff that this guy's heaped on him, and he's still happily doing the country's work, but the president and the administration's work.
Okay, so the security shows up at Pruitt's apartment. I found it.
You found the story. Okay, here we go.
The place he was renting, I think, for $50 a day. And he was unresponsive. The Capitol Police were called, and because they were concerned for his safety, they broke down the door. And when they got in there, he said he was taking a nap. And this is during the day, the EPA administrator.
How old is he? You get to take a nap in the middle of the day. It's good for you.
I don't get to take a nap in the middle of the day.
So he's such a sound sleeper that they had to break down. Where was he sleeping, by the way? Where did this happen?
It was in Washington.
In his office?
His condo, this apartment. And so they were concerned for his safety, so they broke the door down.
Okay, wait a minute.
And now they're fighting over who pays for the door. Like, they want the EPA to pay for the door.
Wait a minute. So he's taking a nap in his condo, which by right you can do in America still.
Right. But he's a cabinet member, and if they can't reach him, they start to worry that maybe there's something wrong.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, because was there a spotted owl issue that they needed his immediate emergency opinion on?
There was when McCollum, this woman who was nearby, when McCollum was unable to help them find a key to access Pruitt's unit, local law enforcement called by Pruitt's detail and Capitol Police broke down the door to the condo. He was inside where he told ABC he had been napping.
Hey, what's up, guys? Wow, what happened to the door? Woo, someone's going to have to pay for that. All right, will he have a job by the 4th of July, Scott Stanis?
No.
No.
Patty Vasquez says no. Really? Okay. The president, by the way, is not going to go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Again.
Mm-hmm.
Good decision, bad decision.
Maybe it's a good thing. They're sending his press secretary.
I wish he was doing it, because remember that one he gave with he and Hillary?
The one that got him to be president, right?
Well, yeah. He got taunted into it. But remember when he did the one for the Archdiocese of New York?
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. He thought he was all funny and roasting Hillary.
The Al Smith dinner, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that was
there are some of us who truly believe that Donald Trump is president today because Barack Obama made too much fun of him years ago.
Say what you will about Mr. Trump, he certainly would bring some change to the White House. All kidding aside, obviously we all know about your credentials and breadth of experience. For example, seriously, just recently, in an episode of Celebrity Apprentice, at the steakhouse, the men's cooking team did not impress the judges from Omaha Steaks. And there was a lot of blame to go around, but you, Mr. Trump, recognized that the real problem was a lack of leadership. And so ultimately, you didn't blame Little John or Meatloaf. You fired Gary Busey. And these are the kind of decisions that would keep me up at night.
Yeah, I think it's good that he doesn't go, actually.
I'm with you on
that. For the country. I mean,
well, right.
I really
What's
do.
What's the upside? I mean, what is the upside to him going there? It's not going to go well. It would be hostile.
I mean, if you don't like him, it'd be really enjoyable to watch him grimace. But big picture.
But this year, don't forget, he did go to the Gridiron, which is off the record. But he did attend that.
Scott Stanis, Steve Bertrand, Patty Vasquez, and me, John Williams, part of the Mincing Rascals podcast. We broadcast part of it on Saturdays. You can hear the full podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for The Mincing Rascals. It's 11:24. This is WGN. Thank you, Domati.
Look, they gave up two options, stripping to lose. Used to dance in a club right across from my school.
It's 11:40 on GN.
Don't get it confused. Had to set the record straight because it's up to assume. Mama couldn't give it to me. Had to get it in suits. Lord only knows how I got it in suits. I was covered in dollars. Now I'm dripping in jewels. So play with my money. Might as well spit in my food. Tating my guts. Now they swear it was cool. Went from making tuna sandwiches to making the news. I started speaking my mind and tripping my views. Real only thing fake is the boobs. Getting money, go hard.
Saturdays at this time, producer Griffin introduces us to a song that maybe we haven't heard before, and then we rate it. It's the first thing we always check out on the Vibe Score segment, where we score things on a score of 1 to 100. All right, Griff, what were you listening to there?
Cardi B dropped an album yesterday called Invasion of Privacy. That was the first track, Get Up 10.
I thought that was her. I think I knew that was her.
Really?
Well,
that's pretty good. She was at the Grammys with Bruno Mars. She's got a couple huge hit singles. One called Bodak Yellow came out last year. Kind of the song of last year, I think, to a lot of people. And that now appears on this album. But
what is she like, Griffin? Describe her.
Oh, she's awesome.
Big personality.
Absolutely, yeah. And
started off as an Instagram famous Instagram star, then did a season on Love and Hip Hop.
Right.
Spun that off. Started off as an exotic dancer. Spun it off into a rap career from the Bronx in New York. And rags to riches story.
So, yeah, Domati, what do you think?
100. Easily.
100.
I mean, because in the hip hop community, people thought that she was just going to be this kitschy.
Right.
You know, that just, but she actually, and then she had Bodak Yellow. No one thought she could follow it up with a full album, even though she had like 3 mixtapes before that. But she's actually a skilled lyricist and unapologetic about her sordid background and really is like a, kind of like people are rooting for, kind of an underdog.
I think so. And I think the album, yeah, has put to rest some of those
those criticisms.
Yeah,
cynics. Skeptical.
Skeptical, I guess, is more the word. Yeah, of I think the song was undeniable, but there were still a lot of people like, but where's the album? Does she have 10, 20 more songs like this in her? But the album is really good.
It is. I will say this, Griff, for the advanced hip hop fan you are, that intro sounds a lot like Meek Mill's intro on Dreams and Nightmares.
Sure, yeah.
That instrumental. And that's the only thing I kind of don't like about the album. You can kind of feel influences of popular producers, and they kind of created this cookie cutter formula. But it's her first album, and she did amazing.
Yeah, and who else is going to give us a Meek Mill song right now? Not Meek Mill, unfortunately. Free Meek.
Free Meek. John, can you say Free Meek, please?
I'm just over here listening. You guys are doing a great job. Keep going.
We hijacked the show. What did you think?
It's not my cup of tea. I thought it was really good, though. I mean, I'm trying not to play up to the room here and be cool like the cool kids, but as we were listening to it, two things are going through my mind. One was, hope there's no curse words coming. And number two, this is actually pretty good. I had a good feeling for it. I'm not 100 on that. What was your vibe score, Griff?
I'd go 87.
I'd go 79, but that's about as far as I go with that genre. So
it's pretty good.
Hey, Joey, are you listening to this?
Yeah, you know, it's really rude of Domati to take basically everything I was going to say. I mean, just word for word.
Kind of hit a button there with the Dominator, didn't we?
I'll give an 82. It started 82. Off a little slow, but I did enjoy it.
Is she going to be at the Masters, Joe? Do you know? Is she...
that? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I don't see her on the board. I'm looking now. I don't see her.
Give us something else to rate here, Griff.
Facebook.
Okay.
Facebook. Everybody uses it. They're in big trouble. But are you still using it, or have you opted out? Or are you leaning one way or the other?
Two friends of mine volunteered to me this week. They quit Facebook. Literally deleted the app from their phone. Sorry, Griff. Keep going.
No, yeah. That's the gist. So,
where are you on Facebook?
Yeah.
I still like to post things there. It's still very effective. I'm not as mad at Facebook as everybody else is. And I've also cashed in all of my hope that I'll ever be private anymore. You know what I mean? I think if you bank in America, you are vulnerable. And you volunteered to be part of this community, and Facebook's a company that's trying to maximize revenue. It's not the IRS. It's not the government. I'm not mad at Facebook. They have not done a great job protecting your privacy.
Yeah, don't you think there's something phony about the way they've positioned themselves, made themselves look? I think that Mark Zuckerberg and everybody else that runs Facebook, they're kind of on this apology tour now, but there's no question in my mind that they still don't think they've done anything wrong.
Well, then you don't believe a word they said this week, then.
Basically, yeah. No, I don't. So, and I'm not going to stop using Facebook, probably, although I probably could. I find myself on Twitter more these days.
Yeah, but, like, think of how this is just me. I use Facebook to post things, your movie reviews, things we've done at the radio station. It's just a really great tool, and Twitter does not do that. Instagram does not do that. You don't get some of the headaches with those other platforms that you do. And by that, I mean political commentary that you don't like, people grandstanding maybe as much.
You get the politics on Twitter. Instagram is more the place where you find yourself rid of a lot of that stuff.
Well, I mean, you do get the politics on Twitter, but it limits you to 280 characters or a bunch of posts, and I just don't think that's as effective.
Yeah, Twitter doesn't feel as loud. Facebook feels really loud when people speak. Huh. And conversations don't end in those comment sections when you say something sometimes.
That's funny that you feel that way, because I think Twitter is very, it can be Twitter very
feels Facebook yeah. feels more obnoxious to me.
There we go. I think, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, hey, here we go. Here's your vibe score on Facebook, 89. Griffin's vibe score for Facebook is
30. I mean, I'm not going to leave. Probably, but I'm not thrilled with it right now.
Joey, are you mad at Facebook?
I'm not mad. I only have it because I feel like I have to. I mean, this industry kind of thrives on it.
Well, that's me. I don't have a personal account, but I sure do have one I rely on for business. So where are you, Joe?
I'd go around 60.
60. Dominator?
49, teetering on not really feeling Facebook at the moment.
Give me one more, Griff.
2001 A Space Odyssey came out 50 years ago.
Yes!
April 3rd, 1968. 100! Stanley Kubrick's, what many consider the legendary director's best movie. I don't know if it's my personal favorite, but it's a classic.
You guys probably haven't seen it yet, have you? Joe, Domity?
Can't
have
it.
Not.
Yeah, it's generational.
Wow.
Movie's 50 years. I didn't see the movie when I was 9, but when I did see it, I was slayed by it. I thought it was a great movie. I'm hoping that it holds up. I haven't watched 2001 A Space Odyssey for a long time. I saw the trailer for it at the Music Box the other night, and it looks spectacular.
So I guess it's coming back to the Music Box and probably some other theaters at some point in the near future. I know they're doing a series of other Kubrick movies, too, with The Shining, Barry Lyndon, Full Metal Jacket, and Eyes Wide Shut.
Why did you laugh at my saying I don't know how well the movie holds up?
Oh, because the movie holds up. Don't worry. The question is, do you hold up? I think.
You mean if I don't like it anymore, I'm wrong?
I think so, yeah. I think this is one can definitively say that you're wrong if you don't like it. At least a little bit. I mean, because there's
sure
so much
like
there.
It. Well, but I mean, like, will the special effects seem as awesome? Or will the science or the thought be as amazing to me? I don't remember.
I think it will. I think, yeah.
100 for me, but that's just because it's also the first date that I took my bride to, 2001 A Space Odyssey. She checked out shortly after the Neanderthals crashed the bones and threw them into the air. Brenda was gone. She stayed with me. Thank you, Brenda. We haven't done our Ready Player One yet review, have we, Griff? You guys haven't seen Ready Player One. Let's put Ready Player One on the other side. It's 11:48. And we'll get to that in a minute on WGN. Well, hi. It's 11:52 on WGN. This is John Williams. I was just reading a money. Actually, this is posted on Time Magazine's website, but I think it was Money Magazine that actually wrote the piece. It's the 25 best fast food chains in America, ranked 1 to 25, minimum 300 stores across the country to qualify for the fast food. I'll give you the list in just a second. Actually, I got just a second to do it here. Bob Kessler's in the newsroom. Joe Brand's over in sports still. You guys want to take a guess? What is the best, and it's best value and best customer experience. So if it's super expensive, then maybe you'll lose points even if the food's good. If the food's not so great, but it's very affordable, then you gain points. What's that sweet spot? Best food value.
Maybe Subway?
Subway is number 11. And I love Subway. I think it doesn't get the respect it deserves. Subway's 11. So you're in the ballpark there, Mr. Kessler.
I'm just going to take a stab. Arby's.
Arby's is not in the top 10.
Wow.
In-N-Out Burger. Arby's. In-N-Out is number one, but that's not top of mind for us around
Superdog
here.
Superdog in there? Superdog?
Superdog. It does not have 300 units, I don't think.
No, they have like one.
Dairy Queen is number two. I don't go to the Brazier, but I go there for ice cream cones all the time. I'm never disappointed. Yeah. Great value, great food. Zaxby's is number three. It's a Georgia-based fried chicken joint.
You have to put ones that I've heard of.
I've had Zaxby's. I like Zaxby's.
A&W is four. McDonald's is five. Why not? I mean, you know, it's McDonald's, but they get the job done. Number six, Sonic. Number seven, Dunkin' Donuts. Number eight, Bojangles, famous chicken and biscuits. That's a North Carolina-based chain.
Going regional on us here.
Big in the Southeast.
Yeah, I think Superdog should be on. They're going to put that in there.
Chick-fil-A is number nine. I went to Chick-fil-A for the first, I've probably been to Chick-fil-A three times in my life. I went there the other day when I was going to get a Loyola Rambler scarf. So I walked over to the downtown campus And on the way back, there was a Chick-fil-A, and I was really hungry. And spur of the moment, I popped in and bought one of those little sandwiches with a pickle. That's the best damn thing I've ever had. I believe that was a Chick-fil-A over there, right?
That. And where are they ranked?
Number nine.
I really liked your slogan for McDonald's. What was it? That? They take care of business.
They get it done. They take care of business.
They get it done. Yeah.
That's in a way. It's not real aspirational food, but we want a burger. We got a burger.
We're not moving mountains here. We filled your need.
That's the thing. I got a soda, some fries, and a burger. It looks like a hockey puck. You know what it tastes like, and you're happy with it. Next. That's all. I mean, that's my attitude about them. And KFC is number 10. There's your top 10. Taco Bell's 12, Wendy's 13, Panda Express 14, and the list goes on at Time Magazine. Amy Guth is ready to do her noontime business show, or at least a version of it. We've got White Sox baseball pregame coverage starting at 12:35.
We're gonna do an hour of show in 26 minutes.
I didn't kill your whole show by going through the list of fast food joints that rate well.
Yeah, Griffin and I are just planning a new show really fast.
That happens sometimes around here. Somebody goes, oh, and hey, look at this. And the guy you hear in the background going, all right, thanks.
Rip.
Thanks, yes. Bob.
That very thing has happened to me before, especially when I've like filled in for Patty Vasquez or something like that at night when the format is a little more open.
Yeah.
Like I'll have a big topic teed up and I'm like, and Kaufman covered it.
Well, we did that last night.
We're done. Ah. Right. There's that.
But what are you going to do today?
I'm going to be talking with Gene Marks. He is a business expert, small business in particular, and a columnist at Washington Post. We're going to be taking a look. There's a new law that's just been passed in New Hampshire affecting teens and work hours. It'll allow teens to work a lot more hours. And there's a little bit of controversy around that. Like, should we let teens work a lot more hours? So we're going to be talking about that and a couple of other things he's written recently.
I'm thumbs up on that. Have you guys talked much on any of your shows about how they are evidently restructuring internship requirements now? I believe it was it ESPN or somebody, they were having their interns do more than they probably should have. Mm. So the rules and regulations about internships changed. My understanding is now they're easing those regulations. Everything is getting eased these days. And the bottom line is that you can get young people to come into businesses. Might have been MTV, too. It was a big time, you know, like, oh, who wouldn't want that gig internship?
Sure.
And the kids started to rebel because they said, you know what, we're doing work that we aren't getting paid for.
Yeah.
And the reason we're doing it is because you don't want to pay people to do it. And I think they're actually going back in that direction. They're saying that you can bring young people in, give them quote-unquote experience, mm-hmm. and not pay them, mm. even if that's going to conflict with some of the otherwise paid-for jobs in the building. And that's the yin and yang, because to be honest with you, at the end of the day, I would make that trade as a young person. I would work for free. I have. I think a lot of us have benefited from low-paying or no-paying positions in the long run. And it's too bad because then rather than paying those interns down the road, I'll shut up here any second, what a lot of companies did was they eliminated internships and literally cut off that pipeline for themselves or for the kids.
Yeah, and it gets tricky, right? Because, you know, I worked through school. So for me, that wouldn't have been feasible. I took a very tiny part-time internship that paid, I think, like $50 a week, but
right.
I had a full-time job on top of, so that I could do it.
Yeah. No, so you had, well, that's interesting. So that was them really using the opportunity they had. You go get a job and subsidize our not wanting to pay you for
I think it was geared to somebody who probably had economic support from their parents or family that
as,
you could.
As they all are now.
Yeah, which wasn't a situation I was in. I was
thing.
DIY.
Really?
About that. Yeah.
I'm out of your way. You have a really good show.
Good.